Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek From the Holodeck, the Star Trek Discovery Edition. I am Michael Flores, your host. I'm going to do the entire show this week, Dave, in the vein or in the style of a captain's log. Do you think that'll go over well with the listeners?
Probably with our Star Trek fans, honestly.
All right, well, here we go then. No.
I was waiting. I was honestly waiting for you to do it.
All right. So we've got a lot to get into this week. We're going to be discussing and breaking down episode 6 of season 3 titled Scavengers. All right. So Discovery is getting some 32nd century upgrades, Dave, in a really big way.
Yeah.
New tech was introduced and the crew once again mirrored the audience. I was grinning and just as giddy. New badges that doesn't just double as communication devices, but quadruple as holopads, tricorders, and personal transporter devices.
And it starts feeling like the technology is moving forward, which is something that I think is definitely needed, if especially since Discovery moved forward. You've seen hints and teases of like the technology that they're in the time frame that they're in. But to see it fully implemented now, just it feels right now. Discovery is by far right now on its own. It's not going to try to rely on anything, you know, that might be familiar. We're going to see new things actually implemented.
Yeah, that is probably one of the biggest elements that I'm really excited and looking forward to seeing for this season. This is the first time in decades, Dave, where we can actually truly explore new technologies, advances, things that we just never had the opportunity to see. And when we've gone back with the prequels, we're seeing old tech or things that, you know, interesting, clever ways that maybe the older technology works a little differently, as in the case with Enterprise. They did a lot of, they essentially reverse engineered a lot of things and created these cool little situations where we can see like the very beginnings of certain pieces of devices or technology. But with Discovery now being 900 and some years in the future, there's no rules. The only guiding principle at this point is the Gene Roddenberry rule. Like, just stick to, for the most part, Gene Roddenberry's idea of what Star Trek should always be about. But other than that, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want, but you still need to be careful. We don't want any god devices.
No god devices.
As we saw in Picard, where just use your
power of your imagination.
Use the power of imagination like Peter fucking Pan, and your ship will be rebuilt when you need it.
And I want to preface that because, like, me and you were really critical about that.
Yeah.
And people have been comparing that technology to the matter technology
in
Discovery. That is completely different.
It's completely different. They literally explain the programmable matter.
Programmable matter.
The name explains itself. The fact that it reads biosigns and it adapts to the interfaces, it explains itself. Now, yes, it would be nice to get a little more in depth, and we probably will eventually. It's like transporters. We didn't immediately explain how transporters worked in season one of the original series.
But you got like a little tidbit, like they would at least try to explain it with their Star Trek jargon, you know, like saying the matter gets broken down and then transported to the other area. That was like the old way. Here, at least in the episode, they explained to us that the technology is based on, you know, such and such, like their bioenergies. And
yeah, it
attunes to that particular officer.
It's no different than the very easy explanations when they introduced new tech in other shows. Now, yes, TNG and Deep Space Nine, they do get into, and Voyager get into the technobabble quite a bit. And Discovery Season 2 did the same thing, especially with Tilly and Stamets when they get going. The entire Fungus Highway, I forgot the name of it now, for Season 1 that the Spore Drive is based on, yeah, is literally steeped in real science.
Exactly.
Yes, it's larger than life. And it borders on the edge of French science, but it's based on a guy's book.
It's actually based on research.
Yeah. So, I mean, Stamets is, we talked about this during our Season 1 discussions.
Yep.
So they don't make a habit of doing that, of just saying, hey, here you go. I mean, you can nitpick Star Trek all day long, all Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. I mean, the transporter that O'Brien had from the Mirror Universe that could suddenly get you to the other side. I mean, did they really explain that?
No.
No. So if you're going to nitpick Discovery, then you got to be fair and nitpick every time Star Trek did that. They've always done it. So as long as we get little excuses as to why things work, the only thing I'm a stickler on so far is the personal transporter device.
How does it work?
How does it work? Explain it a little bit, because we know how transporters work.
Exactly.
Where's the matter stored? Where's your body stored?
Is it stored into the chip?
If you dematerialize yourself, your personal transport is also being dematerialized. So how's it being activated if it's dematerialized? We've always learned, or always have been led to believe, that when you're being dematerialized, you're in a state of stasis.
Yeah.
So how is anything able to work and operate, especially if nothing's actually put together? All the particles are broken up. Do they have a main hub on board ships and on certain planets where the data is sent, where your body is sent, essentially? I know that's sounding really geeky right now.
But that's
really nerdy. Like, if somebody was listening to this who's not a Star Trek fan, like, Mike is a fucking nerd.
Yeah.
But those are things that I would like to have explained just a bit. We don't need anything in great detail, just a little bit.
Especially since that's the type of themes and tones that make Star Trek what it is. Yes, it sounds geeky and nerdy, but I mean, like, ever since the birth of this franchise, it's been like that. It started, you know, even like back in the 60s when they were talking about personal computers and stuff like that, and AI characters, and the use of especially their medical
devices. Yeah. I mean, come on. What does that scanner do that McCoy has? They never explain how it works.
But
it could, for all we know, it could be a magical fucking wand. And he's using the power of Earth. Gaia herself powers it. Just give Discovery a bit of a pass here, guys. Let's give it some time. Because so far, nothing aggravates me like that aspect in Picard. I think it works so far.
And it's funny, too, because, I mean, the only big thing that has that I've been seeing comments on critiquing this particular episode was the ship itself.
The detached nacelles?
Detached nacelles.
Okay, that is cool.
And it's cool, yeah.
It's supposed to make the ship more maneuverable, but I need a bit on that as well.
Yeah.
I need a little bit more. Why does it I don't know aerodynamics, and I don't know if aerodynamics even applies in space. And that should tell you right there that I'm an idiot when it comes to that type of stuff. But how does detached nacelles allow a ship
to move
in space more freely? Those things do need to be explained.
Yeah.
Now, they're not deal breakers. I didn't roll my eyes. In fact, I was intrigued.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
It
piques my interest.
Yeah, pique my interest, but then keep me involved by giving us a little bit on that later down the road. Let's get some engineers talking. There's perfect scenarios to get that going. You have Stamets, who's from 932 years in the past. The technology has progressed. He needs to understand how all of this works and operates.
Yeah.
Why not have a little bit of a discussion? So it's not a deal breaker, but I'm hoping we do get there. From the story aspect, we got some great personal moments. Burnham was really at the center of this episode.
She was. And honestly, I think Burnham needed to be in the center of this episode now because we've been away from her character since episode one.
We've been focusing on the other crew quite a bit.
On the other crew and on the overall story of the Federation.
And I have no complaints. I mean, we need to work on those other characters. So she was right in the center, and we delved back into some of her problems. That year has changed her, as we had said, and it seems like she's still working through. Despite that year, she still seems to be working through a lot of issues. And perhaps she, you know, because she essentially let go, you know, thinking that she may never see the Discovery and her crew ever again, she had let go, as she mentioned the first episode or the second episode. She had mentioned that. So because of that, she had essentially mentally moved on. But she's going to have to figure things out quickly because she's putting her own feelings and wants above the crew. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about that.
Same here.
I'm a little torn. It's, in my opinion, it's more the same behavior.
It's a regression almost. It's a regression of her character.
A little bit, because I felt like they've really just gone leaps and bounds with Burnham this season, and to see her progress in such a way as a character is rewarding as a longtime fan now of Discovery for the past three seasons, and to see her learn. I mean, that's what a character arc is, Dave. It's not supposed to be a flat line, right? It's supposed to arc. It's supposed to show change. And to see her kind of fall back into her old ways, it's not alarming, and I'm not concerned. But it is worth noting, and I'm hoping that the reason why they're doing this is because they're leading her story down a very specific path, that there's a reason why they needed to do this.
Yeah, and the thing I was going to ask you, the only excuse I could find for me is the fact that that year gap where she didn't have her crew with her. So in a way, just like what you alluded to earlier, she's been away from the crew. She didn't think she'd see them again. So everything that basically she went through kind of like went by the wayside because she has to, quote unquote, move forward. Does that make sense to you? That basically taking a year away from the crew is what might have caused the regression of her character to the point where she's kind of back in that mode of thinking out for herself, not really trusting anybody someone in a higher authority than her, and then like making the same mistake she made in season one with Saru. I mean, that was probably a cool moment. Don't get me wrong. I like where they're going with their relationship, but it's part of me feels like, haven't we been here before?
Yes. I do agree. I can't disagree. It does. However, it does feel a little different, as you were kind of getting to. I think you were trying to get to that.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why she's doing that? Is it slightly different? That's what you were asking, right? Because of that year. And yes, it is more the same. And listen, people don't change, especially when you're an adult. Do you work on your flaws? Yes. Do you try to improve on them? Yes. So logically speaking, as a writer, sure, it's okay to have your characters fall into those patterns. You know, we are a flawed species, as we know. That's no different in the future, in the 32nd century. It's a part of being human. It's a part of learning. It's a part of growing. Sometimes you fall off the wagon. But it does feel a little different. Emotional motivators are not the same. It was kind of hard to see her fall back, into these old patterns. And I get it. These are character flaws, and character flaws make for more complicated and dynamic protagonists. So I'm okay with that. And I had said during the first episode discussion that Burnham has a lot of growing to do. If you remember, we said this in the first episode discussion.
Yes.
Burnham has a lot of growing to do as a Starfleet officer. And this is proof. This is proof. Just because a year went by, sure, she let go of some of her baggage, some of that emotional baggage because of her mother, because of Ash Tyler, because of the Klingon War, because of Philippa Georgiou being killed by Klingons, and then her no doubt feeling partially responsible for that. That year was her recovery. You know, she was rehabbing those emotional wounds.
Yeah.
So she's not in a perfect spot. And she even, again, essentially feeling like she needs to move on. This is her new life, not having to answer to anyone. And we know she wants to make all the decisions. She's a very independent. She has a very independent spirit.
Yes.
So, but Burnham did not just simply betray the trust of Saru and her crew. And this is the part that really, I mean, I'm not a fan of melodrama, but it does work because you see how Saru has changed as well. So I feel like even though Burnham fell into her old ways, you saw a different side of Saru. This isn't the same old distrusting Saru. This is a Saru that has thrown in with Burnham and asked her to be his number one and wants nothing more than to be the best captain he possibly can be. And for him to submit essentially and be completely trustful. And we know that their relationship has really solidified and grown over the last couple seasons. So to see this happen, it truly is a violation at the highest order.
It is.
I mean, she knows the position Saru is in. She violated the trust that is holding friendships together, which is more important than ever. When you think about it, Dave, this is a time when each of the crew feel alone. And all they have is each other and the faith that they can rely and trust in each other. Not to mention, the Admiral could have easily used this as a reason why they should all be separated and put into different ships.
Exactly.
And that is why this entire scenario felt very dangerous for Burnham to just throw caution to the wind. And I'm not quite sold or sure what they were trying to do. Were they trying to show that she's conflicted, that she cares for Book? Because to me, they show a very selfish person.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, at the end of the day, she was about recovering that black box, right?
Yes.
She's about, and that's a good thing. She wanted to find out about the burn, which she feels should be the number one goal. But ultimately, Burnham paid the price, and even she was aware. Before, we've never seen her. We've never quite seen her in such a vulnerable position as she was at the end of the episode, where she pretty much admitted guilt and apologized to Saru and even consoled him when he felt bad for demoting her. What did she say? You're doing the right thing. I mean, if we learned anything from Trek, it's that the job of the number one is to challenge the captain at times, but never to cross the line.
Never to cross the line. And the thing was, Burnham crossed the line because
absolutely.
While we all feel that basically she was trying to probably her original goal just to get the black box and get the order, the information on the burn seemed like it's not a personal goal. It's a goal of everybody that's with her. It's the Discovery crew's goal, yes. But especially with the addition of the endangerment of Book, then you kind of basically go, okay, now we can see that Burnham just internally probably knows she made a selfish decision.
Yeah.
Because she ultimately also wanted to save Book. I mean, you get that sense that, yeah, she was after that. She was after the black box. But she was concerned when they got the ship came back, which was awesome. I think when Grunge showed up on the screen, that was awesome.
Yeah,
because I love the character of Book and how it's all set up with him and his cat on the ship. But like when they get that and then you get the news that Book set this up in case he was not able to go to Burnham himself. And then they find out that 3 weeks passed. Like the command of the ship basically happened 3 weeks ago. So Book has been missing for 3 weeks. That's when you basically start seeing that, okay, her initial goal was to actually go get the black box. But with the addition of like the news that Book's missing, suddenly that's really my goal. I'm really trying to push the fact that we need to go get the black box. We need to go get the black box. And it's like, okay, you know for a fact, Burnham down deep inside, especially with that last scene, came to the realization that she took a selfish choice. She made a selfish decision.
See, and that's where I'm just conflicted, because yes, my initial reaction is, yeah, it's pretty selfish. She put everyone else in harm's way.
I don't think it was putting everybody else in harm's way.
She compromised the mission that Discovery was supposed to be on standby to go rescue the diplomats.
Yeah. And
what if the ship wasn't capable of operating without the number one? That's what the Admiral said, is if you're confident that you can proceed with this mission without your number one, so be it.
So be it.
I really don't know what they were trying to do with her this episode. I'm a little confused by it. It's not
just
bad.
Just a little bit.
I hope we get more of it next week. I hope we continue to expand on that decision she made.
Absolutely.
You know, and I know I already know that it's deeply connected to how she feels. You know, that whole year that changed her perspective and what's important to her. But this is also much of what we've seen before. Look at how the very first way she was introduced to us. She was first mutineer in Star Trek.
Yeah, the first mutineer.
I mean, guilty of starting the war with the Klingons, got her captain killed. You would think you would learn after such a big thing, but this is Burnham. And if this was not Star Trek and this wasn't a show that I was breaking down, Dave, I would say these are admirable traits. Not that she gets people killed. That she puts the weight of the world on her shoulders. And I like people that want to fix things. I like people that want to save the world. They basically want that responsibility. I think that's an admirable trait, but mm-hmm. she isn't a solo act. If she wants to be a solo act, then she should probably join Seven of Nine as the, you know, one of those shitty Rangers.
Exactly.
She's part of Starfleet, and she continues to break protocol. I mean, dude, it wasn't because, okay, so in the first season, you could say maybe they don't, you know, you can say, oh, bad writing, which is what some people said when it comes to Burnham and how she acted.
Yes.
I disagree, but that's what a lot of people said. But this episode, Michelle Paradise and her writers purposely did this for a reason, and that's why I'm going to be patient with why they did this, because they called it out with that scene with Tilly. They called out her blunder. There was no other perspective. There was no other point of view. It was, she did wrong. She fucked up.
She fucked up.
And in a lot of ways, Dave, Tilly is miles ahead of Burnham at this point.
Oh, yeah, being the number one. She should be the number one.
That scene with Saru was such a great way to quickly explore just how far Tilly has come. Her maturity and keen insight into protocol was actually great advice. Like, look at Saru's face when she was talking. He's like, shit, you're right. I mean, Tilly speaking truths, not wanting to be painted in a bad light by Burnham's actions. Hey, she's my best friend. I love her more than anyone, but this isn't right.
This isn't right.
Remember when Burnham in season one was supposed to help Tilly train for command?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. She can train Burnham.
Exactly. And that it's interesting. The only thing that basically made me calm down with this portrayal of Burnham was in the very end, she herself turned to Saru and said, no, you're doing the right thing.
Right.
That is not what season one Burnham would have done.
Right. And Dave, that's why I'm conflicted, but I'm ultimately okay, because this adds more layers to what's going on with her this season.
Yes.
The whole thing that we've mentioned, that her perspective has changed over the last year. That much is clear. This is it. That's why I say it's different. Sure, it's the same Burnham falling into those insubordinate patterns, but the emotional motivator behind this decision is very different.
It is very, very different.
Yeah. And that's why this episode is going to get a pass for that, for having this character fall back into her old ways. It will be interesting to see where this goes. Will Burnham finally learn to follow orders? I hope we see a learning moment and she finally works through these flaws. Perhaps they will parallel that with the new person she becomes over that year. So this black box, Dave, that Burnham was after can potentially shed light on the burn, correct?
Yes.
Something that the Admiral and Starfleet would rather not worry about, as they feel like they have more pressing matters to attend to.
And the funny part is, normally you would say, oh, Starfleet's just being, you know, if this was a different show, we would say, oh, Starfleet is, they're trying to portray Starfleet as, you know, arrogant, and they're
also, the Admiral would have told Burnham, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Or shut the fuck shut up at least two up. Or three times. But
you would normally say that basically that they're trying to portray the Federation in a bad light. But in all honesty,
yeah,
the Federation's actually has good reasons for this. They're short in number, and they've already are dealing with a major problem with the Unchained, I think it's the Unchained Emerald. That new underground crime syndicate that's just tearing this quadrant apart.
Right.
And I'm like, they have enough problems. They don't have to deal with the burn right now, because guess what? That's never been an issue for them at this point. They're not really worried about the burn, because they're trying to focus on what they can ultimately deal with right now in front of their face.
Well, the more we learn, the more we realize that it seems like they're just simply trying to survive.
Exactly. They're trying to survive.
And honestly, and this is why I like this. I feel like this season is well thought out in a lot of ways, not just with the immediate character arcs, but with the overall plan and strategy. Like, there's a thought process, because there's a lot of shows nowadays that you don't really sense that there's a thought process going on with the unseen. And when you're a good showrunner and you're a capable writing room, you think about a lot of the things that are not ever going to be seen. You really map out the world, whether or not that element of the world that you're mapping out is ever going to be seen. That's something that a lot of writers do, Dave. Good writers, they end up writing these backstories on their protagonists and antagonists and characters, guest spots that may never actually be stated. But as long as you have that information written someplace and you understand the history of this character, it actually aids in your writing, because you know the person that much better, or the scenario of the situation that much better. And I feel like they're doing the same thing with Discovery this season, because it does make sense that the Admiral wouldn't worry about the burn. Because how are they ever going to figure it out? They have no
warp
ability to warp. Dilithium is scarce. They're being attacked from all around. They've already fled Earth, so that Earth is not a target. When do they have time to worry about the burn?
Exactly.
I mean, if someone told us the world blew up 200 years ago and suddenly, you know, you and I and about 1,000 other people came back to Earth in a shuttle because we had left. Sure, we're going to have lots of questions, but the people that survived are like, shit, that happened 200 years ago, and there's no way for us to ever figure out how it happened. 150 years is a long fucking time.
It is.
And that's how long ago it happened, right? The burn?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a long time. They don't have the resources.
They don't have the resources. And kudos to Discovery. I am so glad how they're portraying the Admiral Vance.
Yeah, he's so good.
I really like him. They're not portraying him as a dick. They're not portraying him as an asshole.
No, he's actually logical.
He's very logical, and he is basically being an admiral.
Yeah.
He's being a commander.
He's being a leader. The weight of the survival of the Federation and Starfleet is literally on his shoulders.
On his shoulders.
One bad move, and it's lights out. It's game over for them.
Well, I think it was even him that basically that stated that, well, Discovery is the only ship that could probably go there with their spore drive.
Yeah.
And come back in time. But you're needed. just because of our numbers right now, you're needed to this mission that you guys have been assigned to.
Yeah, it all makes
also
sense.
Really important.
Yeah, it makes sense. And even where Burnham's coming from, her logic also makes sense. And that's why I like this entire scenario, because no one's wrong. It's all about perspective. It's all about context. She's of the opinion that the Federation cannot stabilize while the cause of the burn remains a question. Essentially, they are just treading water. And she's not wrong.
Yeah.
They're just trying to stay afloat. And that's why I like the Admiral, because he isn't that typical. And we get a lot of asshole admirals in Star Trek. We always have. I mean, that's just something. It's always been a part of Star Trek.
Just always been a part of Star Trek.
Yeah. And the fact that this guy is, yes, what he says is God. Listen, he's the authority, but it doesn't mean he's not going to sit there and listen. Even after Burnham was insubordinate, he took to heart what she said. And he, and the face he made, showed all of us that he also agreed with her that, hey, you know, you might have a point there.
Yeah,
you're right. Like, how can we be truly stabilized if we don't really know the cause of this catastrophe?
Of the catastrophe. But the thing I really like, and I ultimately feel that this episode, while it's on face value, it's Burnham centric. The main character that the episode centers around actually is Saru. It's to establish Saru as this brand new captain, because even in the very end, Vance makes Saru make that decision. He doesn't tell Burnham that she's demoted. No.
Well, he's also learning as well. He's new at this.
Yeah. And ultimately, I feel like in actuality, the episode to me feels like it's more of an important piece for Saru to establish himself as a captain, because he has to be the one to make those decisions, even though he sees them as his family. And we see that. We saw that in the last episode where he really looks at the Discovery crew as, they're my family. Well, if you want to be captain, you got to be willing to look at those people who you say that they're your family and command them.
Right.
Because that's what a captain does.
That's right.
And
look at you, David. You should be a captain. Are you a captain?
No, no, no.
That's right. You're a fucking ensign. You better know your place.
I'm still an ensign. I don't even have a pip.
And listen, I throw you out the airlock on the regs.
On the regs.
Just because. And then I'll have my transporter chief just like, all right, go ahead and transport him in right before he's about to die. Just a little torture, a little punishment. Whenever you fuck up, that's what I do.
That's what you
airlock
do.
Airlock for you, mister.
No torture chamber for you.
Airlock and then apologize.
Apologize. But, like, that's what it's like was really interesting to me in the very end of it all. I was like going, well, I'm questioning Burnham, but I'm feeling very comfortable with Saru.
Yeah, I don't hate any of what they did. No. I want to make that clear. I have questions and I have some concerns when it comes to the whole Burnham falling into those same patterns, but it's not a deal breaker yet. I do understand what they're trying to do, and I'm hoping ultimately it works towards answering or at least bringing her perspective change to completion, to a resolve. We fully understand what she's going through. All right, Dave, let's take a very quick break. Then when we get back, we'll jump into the rest of our discussion. We have a lot of things to get into still. Sit tight.
Black alert. Black alert.
All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier. Each of which offers you more Star Trek from the holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcast discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RaymanDigital and pledge. It's the only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her,
ooh,
and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek from the Holodeck. Okay, so what's going on with Giorgio, Dave? Those are some big questions there. There is something going on. Flashbacks. Passing out. She is snapping at Burnham. There's a lot of theories going on.
There's a lot. And there's a lot of new theories that are basically being tossed around that I would be interested to see what you would think of, especially one that I saw.
Okay, go ahead then.
Today.
Go ahead. I hate fan theories because they're always so stupid.
I do too, most of the time. But there is some validity to this
one. Okay, go ahead. Give me one.
Okay. We saw one of the
flashbacks. Choose your best, because I'm only going to give you one, Dave.
This is probably the best one. Okay. It's a hint. Okay, we saw one of the flashbacks in Giorgio's memories where she kills Lorca, right? Well, if you were keen eye of the whole scene, when Lorca falls into the pit,
yeah,
it looks mysteriously like the mycelial network that was very infamous in season 2, where we find out that basically Stamets's lover and our favorite doctor was alive.
Which means Lorca could be reborn.
Yes, that is the best one that I saw. And I'm like going, oh, I gotta see what Mike thinks about this one, because it deals with one of our favorite characters from season 1.
Yes, Dave. Okay. Oh, man. Okay. That is way too Star Wars-ish.
But I want him back.
Listen, I like Lorca too. There's a lot. I still feel very strongly against what they did to him.
Exactly.
But
come on, Mike.
It's just too Star Wars-ish. Like, I mean, dude, pushing it with Culbert's resurrection. Oh, okay, hold on a second. I mean, we did have Search for Spock.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is a thing in Star Trek.
It's a thing in Star Trek.
Okay, well.
And yes, it's been used to bring back heroes.
I won't poo-poo I won't poo-poo on it, Dave.
If Lorca were to come back and be kind of like the big-time villain. Because let's face it, Lorca was the villain. He wanted to kill everybody.
Yeah. Okay, so there are moments in Scavengers when Giorgio zones out and seems to be reliving events from the past and in the Mirror Universe. The first of these flashbacks happens at the beginning of the episode when Giorgio teases Michael about a relationship with Book and jokes about things not working out with Tyler. Of course, that's a reference to Ash Tyler and the which is the Klingon human that she just doesn't remember now, apparently. She loves that book penis. Give me that book penis.
Poor Ash.
Giorgio suddenly goes into a trance and she sees flashes of imagery from the Mirror Universe. And I have a list here of the things she sees. Are you ready?
Okay.
Give me a second here. I'm having problems with my mic. Give me a second. Hello, check. All right. So there's some kind of castle on a hill. The Terran Empire emblem we see. Possibly Giorgio herself in her Emperor attire. Someone is covered in blood with a helmet. There's also one of those Terran Empire daggers. We also hear Giorgio say the word sun. We see Giorgio's flagship in the Terran Empire. I believe it was the ISS Charon.
Charon, yeah.
Is that how you say it? Now, she also said, let's get back to this knife for a second. She also reminded us that the Burnham in her universe had essentially stabbed her in the back.
Yes.
So, obviously, when you remind the audience of something very specific from the first season, there's got to be something at play there. They're making sure we're following those breadcrumbs. The second time Giorgio has one of the flashbacks is towards the end of the episode. This time, some of the imagery repeats, but like the flash of the Charon, this imagery is directly linked to stuff from season one. The second flash includes the same person covered in blood, Giorgio again saying son, a shot of Lorca, as you mentioned, falling to his death, a shot of Giorgio's hologram confronting Michael in the Wolf Inside episode, Michael Burnham being brought before Emperor Giorgio in Vaulting Ambition. So other than the imagery of the bloody body, the knife, and Giorgio saying son, most of the stuff in the flashbacks is from season one.
It's from season one, yes.
So this combined with Giorgio saying to Michael, I remember another Michael Burnham, blah, 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 makes it seem like she's fixed on the past and something is happening to her pertaining to that.
And we did, and this doesn't come honestly out of the blue, because in the last episode with her discussion with Kovic,
yeah,
the my favorite scene in that last episode, he makes the comment that basically she is possibly going to be suffering some kind of ailment from being away from the mirror universe for this long.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards. Something pertaining to her moving 900 years into the future, and the fact that the Section 31 boss had said the mirror universe has moved further and further away.
Yeah.
And that it's nearly impossible to, alluding to the fact that it's nearly impossible to cross back over. And then they delve into the biology of Terrans. The Terrans. It makes you think that there's a scientific reason as to why something's happening. I had speculated that last episode that something's happening to her body. Like she's being made undone. Perhaps her body just doesn't belong in this universe.
She's breaking down.
She's breaking down. And maybe that's still happening. Maybe that is still happening. A part of me, and sometimes my mind veers into heavy science fiction, and we know Star Trek isn't really science fiction. What is the phrase that we like to call Star Trek? It is science fiction. Never mind. Prank caller. There is something we have had discussions, and my mind is blank now. We call it something else, because usually Star Trek's steeped in a lot of real science.
Yeah.
But I digress, Dave. What was I talking about?
You're talking about the flashbacks and basically the theory of basically Giorgio breaking down. And
I'm still thinking it has something to do with that, just because of the things they were alluding to with the biology. There was a part of me that was thinking possibly she was being merged with the original Giorgio. Because of universe reasons and science. Perhaps she was gaining memories or losing memories from who she really is. That seems a little more far-fetched in my opinion, but that's where my mind was going. There's got to be some aspect of that, though. There has to be something about the universe being so far away.
Because
she didn't have these problems during last season.
Yeah, and I remember me and you discussing about the science behind the mirror universe and how it pertains to Giorgio and one of our past shows and stuff like that, and how, like, well, if she's here, how does that affect the idea that I remember me and you discussing about, like, the idea of destiny, that destiny constantly is trying to merge it back into like one singularity, where it's basically, even though it might change, there's still something that basically brings it back, trying to make it familiar. And I started thinking about Giorgio in this regard is like, just like what you said. And I honestly think you're onto something, that the universe is trying to merge her into the Giorgio that was in the Prime universe. Now we know that that Giorgio is missing. She's dead. So
we know that in Star Trek, the universe always corrects itself.
The universe corrects itself.
That's one of the reasons why I like the Kelvin timeline. I know a lot of people don't, but that's why I like the Kelvin timeline, because it was the first movie was very clever in how things were changed because of time travel. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, things were slowly trying to correct itself. Like Captain Pike.
Captain Pike.
Going right back into that wheelchair. Yes, it's a different scenario, but destiny calls that he must be on that in that wheelchair. So there
must be disabled.
Yeah. So that's why I like the Kelvin timeline, because things were still, even though it changed and it went off course, it still in the end was trying to course correct itself. And perhaps that's also the case here with Discovery season 3. Again, we probably are way off.
We could be. But I mean, the breadcrumbs are there, because I was trying to think, when she was having her flashbacks, the seeing like the mirror universe flashbacks made sense for that Giorgio.
Yeah.
But the ones where she's saying son, where the ones where she's saying, where you see her stand, I don't even know if it's either she's standing above the body that's been stabbed or she's the body that's stabbed. Because at first I was like thinking, oh, that's when Giorgio was stabbed on the Klingon ship.
Yeah.
And she was lying on her back.
Yeah. Well, some people are thinking that this is a repressed memory, something that's now surfacing because of traveling. Possibly the character Kovich, played by David Cronenberg, might have done something to her.
That one, I don't think so. I don't think Kovich would do anything.
He didn't seem to have any motives that way in that regard. It seemed like he liked her, and it also seemed like she liked him. Now, that also goes to another theory that's been floating within the interwebs, and I actually was thinking the exact same thing. They made it a point to show us that they liked each other. That, hell, you know, I respect you. That much was obvious. And that takes a lot to win Giorgio over.
Yeah.
Very few people have been able to win Mirror Universe Giorgio over. In episode 5, we saw that they came to a little bit of an agreement in the way they were talking. Like, hey, listen, I know you're going to lie to me, so I'm just going to ask you questions and see what I can derive. I'm going to let you ask me questions and see what I can derive from the questions you ask me, which was fucking smart to begin with.
Yeah.
I really like that. But this has led to theories that possibly Kovich himself is from the Mirror Universe at some point.
I've seen those, and it kind of would make sense of how Kovich acts.
Well, how he acts and how he knows so much about the Mirror Universe. The fact that he's in charge, at least we can assume he's in charge of Section 31. This will also be a pretty interesting backdrop for the Section 31 spinoff. I mean, I'm not sold on that idea, but it would work. He did seem to know a lot, and we know that Section 31 operates on their own.
On their own.
So we'll see. I do like that this doesn't feel weak. I know in Discovery season 1, some of those twists and things they were trying to hide from us were a little weak. Like, okay.
But honestly, dude, this is one of the actually stronger ones.
This is completely different. This is well thought out.
This is well thought
out. Because your mind goes in 20,000 different places. When it came to Ash Tyler and Voke, we're like, okay, so we didn't see Voke for 4 episodes. Suddenly Ash Tyler shows up. Okay, you're the Klingon, bro. Like, that's easy.
That's easy. But like this one, there's actually a legitimate mystery that basically really does intrigue me, and it's starting to open up avenues of like, hey, why would she have flashbacks of this? Are these premonitions? Are these warnings?
And it's a subplot too, which is much better than designing an entire season on flashbacks and a mystery.
And then ultimately, dude, I just basically say, give me back Lorca and basically make him the big bad, and I'll be happy.
Now, why can't we have good Lorca?
Lorca. I want the Lorca that we all were like, going, you know, he's a scary motherfucker.
All right. So outside of the mystery element, I also really like that they are continuing to build on the relationship with Burnham and Giorgio. But she's having problems with showing vulnerability and trust due to her experiences within the mirror universe. If they are reminding us of these things, as I said a moment ago, then I wonder if this betrayal will be connected in some way.
Yeah.
In this week's story C, Adira confides in Stamets that she's seeing Gray, and he fully believes her. And I will say that I struggle a bit with Stamets as a character. I've said this before.
But this works, honestly.
But this episode really helped with my issues. It's nice to see a more empathetic person who's not just consumed with his own problems. He's so self-absorbed. I've never seen a more self-absorbed character in Star Trek than Stamets.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him finally give a shit. And not just because, oh, you have a good point.
Yeah,
okay, I exactly. guess I'll listen to you. No, this is, hey, I'm going to sit next to someone who obviously has problems talking to themselves. And I'm curious, what are they going through? It was a sincere moment with Stamets. And we don't get a lot of those truly sincere moments with him.
And it wasn't force-fed or forced, like hammer-fisted in.
Yeah.
Because, like, I could see this legitimately working for this relationship for Stamets and Adira, because like Stamets has been in that similar scenario. He's had to deal with freaking, you know, seeing images of his former fallen loved one haunting him.
Yeah.
Now Adira is different. I mean, like, Gray's not haunting her. There's no negative.
I mean, kind of. Haunting can be a good thing.
That her haunting is actually in a positive way.
Don't you remember that episode of Mary Povich where he interviewed a woman that was having sex with 20 demons?
With 20 demons. Like that. No. I was married to a ghost pirate.
Yeah, there you go. See, that's not a bad haunting.
That's not a bad haunting.
She's having a great time on the high seas. All right. I will say, as I said, I do struggle with Stamets. This episode did help resolve much of that.
Yeah.
And it's also a plus that we are seeing Stamets and Culbert as separate characters this season.
Dude, yeah.
I just don't like Dave. And you can pipe in, obviously, Dave, as the resident bisexual. I just don't like when gay characters are stripped of any other qualities that make them valuable and unique.
I'm with you.
And are just used to explore a gay relationship as if that's all they have to offer a TV show or a story. Hey, you're gay, so gay relationship all day long.
That's what
we're going to worry about. Never mind the fact that your gayness only occupies maybe 5% of your day,
exactly.
5% of your life. Exactly. But hey, your entire story is going to revolve around gay.
Exactly.
Can you imagine, Dave, if this was a straight relationship, we'd be watching a romance.
Yeah.
Enough is enough.
It's pandering.
It is very much pandering. Gay is not an identity. It's a sexual orientation. And sure, it's part of how you identify. Absolutely. I get that. But it shouldn't solely define a person.
It is not something that defines you. Because
it's a part of you.
It's a part of you.
And you identify as that, but it shouldn't be your identity.
And the people that want to defend this, I basically would tell them.
I don't think a lot of people defend it, Dave.
You never know, dude. You never know. There are people who are like so.
You think our next YouTube comments would be, how dare you?
How dare you? This is the only way we can get acceptance. If this is the only way you can get acceptance, you're the problem.
Okay, you know what acceptance truly is? It's not putting you on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You're just like everyone else here.
Just like everyone else.
Average, lame, and boring. Just like us. Just because you like the same sex doesn't put you into a special little bracket. It's silly. And I've already said way too much because it's all about story for me. And it's just... When you, and I feel like it's insulting. I have gay people in my family, and we've talked about this. At least they were well aware. Michelle Paradise was well aware of what they needed to do with these characters.
Yes.
You can't have a show that only defines these characters as simply they're gay.
And dude, it's amazing what they've done with Culbert within the past couple episodes.
He's my favorite character. He's one of my favorite characters.
Why?
Because I've always liked him.
He's one of the most empathetic characters that basically is the glue to the crew.
Listen, he's too good for Stamets. I hope he cheats on Stamets.
I hope he basically finds someone so hot. He needs to
move on to greener pastures. Yeah. Like Book. Like, come on, Book.
Book. He needs to find a Book.
Yeah, play for the other team. Play for
the other team. Colbert needs to kind of like meet Book and go, oh, hey, how's it going? And then Stamets and Stamets
could be a cuckold.
And Burnham can just wallow.
Stamets and Burnham can cry-fap in the background.
Cry-fap in the background. Yeah. I think Stamets would cry-fap.
And so would Burnham. I mean, you see that kiss they did with her and Book? Like, Book, stay off my girl, bro. You could have Colbert. I sanction that relationship. But get off Burnham. So stupid. I actually did like that. That was a really good moment between Book and Burnham.
Book and Burnham, yeah.
That's how you do it.
Because it seems it honestly is kind of like, we all know that. We all know it, that basically it's been hinted at. And we're like, yeah, they're an item. They're a couple. And just accept it. And the beautiful thing is we moved on. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it worked. All right, Dave, this does bring us to the end of our discussion for this episode, but let's move into our final thoughts. We have a minute and 30 seconds.
Okay.
So
let's make it
very quick, Dave. Go ahead. Start us off.
My final thoughts on this episode, I am giving this a score of 89. I still actually, this is the first one that I could say it's not better than the last episode, because that last episode, dude, was just gold.
Well, we're getting to that point where it's hard to say, okay, this episode's better than last,
better than last
they're
week.
All just good.
They're
now.
Good. This yeah. one's a good episode still. It's 89. It's very solid. I like where they were going. I like the fact that we're finally getting.
Why is it 89? I'm kind of curious. Your last episode, you gave a 98.
The problem that the main question
that much lower than
just because they touched on something that was a sore point from season one.
Okay.
You know,
that's fair.
Like, okay. For me, I was like going, I'm over.
Okay. Hold on. Burnham. Is this personal opinion or is this critical thought? we rate based on critical.
That's the thing that was tough. Was I didn't know if I was creating it critically or it's a personal opinion, because critically you don't want characters to retread their past story arcs. No. I mean, I've been taught from film school that's a no-no in writing. You just basically go, if your character's already gone that path, why are you retreading it?
But the emotional motivation is very different though. So you're not necessarily retreading. And honestly, Dave, I feel like
That's where I was when I was coming up with the critiquing. Is it a retread or is it basically something different?
And we really don't know definitively yet. We'll know soon.
But that's why it drops down, because I'm like not sure, because they didn't show definitively that it was not a retread. Because for me, I felt like it was borderline a retread of like a character that
regression. That's fair, Dave. So 89%?
89. Still okay. A strong episode, though.
Yeah. I'm going to give this episode a 94%. I do have the same issues as you. However, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, because as a script, written fine. As a story, just fine. The plotting worked. The sequence of the plot worked. Everything worked. Acting worked. There's three stories essentially going on, Dave. We had story A, story B, and story C. And yet there was one moment during this episode that I felt they were losing sight of anything. Strong writing. And I will reserve my judgment on the Burnham aspect until we see where it goes.
Where it goes.
So what did I say? 94%? 94%. This does bring us to an end. I want to thank everybody for listening. Remember, head over to patreon.com/Rain Man Digital and pledge $3 or $5 a month. You can also do an annual membership if you just want to help us out. $30 for the $3 tier, $50 for the $5 tier, because you get 2 months free when you choose to pay for an entire year up front. Helps us out.
Keeps the lights on.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.